dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business. SwissAmerica.com brings you the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Hey folks, it's Jim Hansen, Uncle Jimbo from Black Five and one of the editors at Breitbart's Big Peace site, sitting in for Frank Gaffney today on Secure Freedom Radio. Now, there's a lot going on in the world. Most of it in the news these days seems to be focused on the debacle that is the U.S. economy. You know, the spending, the debt, all the things that actually at this point are scaring my 18-year-old daughter, who ought to be a fairly optimistic human being and is in most instances, but she's at the point where she's not convinced we're doing anything that's going to make America a better place, which was always kind of the promise all along. We'll make this a better place for our children. Now, bad as I think our economic issues are, those are fairly solvable. I don't think any of them are end of America type situations, but I think we're putting ourselves in a position around the world where we're no longer the big player. We're no longer the big dog. And I got to be honest, that may make Barack Obama happy and seems to be one of his goals. It makes me angry. I think it wastes the goodwill, the power, the strength, everything that should be looked at as good points of America are being spun around for us and portrayed as weaknesses or things that we have something to apologize for. You know, as if we have been bestriding the earth, squashing poor indigenous civilizations. You know, they may or may not be indigent. And basically, you know, throwing our weight around and being the kind of people that no one else on earth should want for neighbors. And so we're supposed to feel bad that our European friends think we need to change our ways, think we need to stop driving SUVs. You know, I think we need to eat a vegan lifestyle and all these kind of things. And I just think if we can add one thing to the Tea Party, I would like to propose that we maintain a strong America. You know, not just the economic engine, because we can't be the economic engine that runs the world. There's too many people now, you know, and let's just live with that. Let's adapt to it. Let's be smart about it. But what we can be and should be is the example for everyone else to look at and say, you know, I want to be like them. I want to live there. I want to go there because no matter who I am, if I apply myself, if I bust my butt, I can move up the food chain. Because that's not the case most places around the world. You know, most places around the world, you may live slightly better off than your forebears, but not much. And it's not like you're going to bust through the whatever ceiling, the bamboo, the thatch ceiling, whatever you want to call it, you know, and really change your lifestyle or your family's lifestyle. It's just not the way the rest of the world works. America has always worked that way. And I think now is one of the first times since back when Jimmy Carter was president, at least in my lifetime, where people are not optimistic. You know, they're not convinced that things are going to be better. They're not convinced that America will be a shining example. And I think our foreign policy has been a huge factor in that. You know, we've always suffered economic downturns. We've never had a president who has gone out to the world and done a several year worldwide, I apologize for America tour. And I think that's something we have to change. I think fortunately we have elections coming up. It's not a presidential election, but I think if we have a control of the House by Republicans and large inroads and God willing, a creek don't rise, control the Senate by the Republicans, we could really put some pressure on President Obama to start acting like America is not a country that needs to be apologized for. You know, I mean, Newt Gingrich said something recently that I would agree with, but think was probably not helpful to the argument. And he made the point that Obama is a colonialist Kenyan attitude towards America's place in the world. And I have to agree, it is unmistakable he has a hostility towards our greatest friend in the world, Great Britain, and that it would be surprising if it wasn't because of the fact that England as a colonial power, trod hard upon Kenya and did some mean things to President Obama's grandfather, among other folks. But I think it's wrong to make it that personal. I think it's better to take on the entire mentality that says America is not a great power. And that's the whole left. The entire left wants America to get in line behind our moral betters in the European Union, who've already decided to band together and, you know, from each according to their ability, to each according to their needs. Now, you can call it social democracy, which is fair. I don't believe it's full-blown socialism. But I think it's time for us to add a plank to the Tea Party's very understandable, although it seems to escape the mainstream media, but quite understandable cry of stop spending my money. Well, I vote we graft onto that a plank that says stop treating America like we should be ashamed of ourselves. Now, there's no question that in the history of our country, bad things have been done in the name of America. Okay, granted. But if you look at the amount of good that's been done, and if you look at the time frames when we did the things that today are considered evil, they weren't then. They were common practice. Now, we learned as a country. We have freedom to change the way we operate. And we've done so and done more good than any of the other Western democracies, than any of the other large powers. You know, there are plenty of people, large powers in history, who've been stomping around the planet imposing their will. But there have been very few who've been imposing freedom on people. There have been very few that have been spreading liberty, that have been spreading economic well-being, that have been spreading health, welfare, education, you know, and a way of life that says oppression is not the status quo. We do not accept that. Oppression is something that we will fight to overcome. Oppression is something we won't accept within our borders, and we won't accept it when it's done, apparently, on some scale large enough to justify our involvement. That's always been part of what America has stood for. And I think the idea that we now have some need to apologize for the fact that we use a fair amount of resources. We also provide a fair amount of value back to the rest of the world in medicine, in technology, in things that make their lives infinitely better. And in the end, it's not going to shock anybody when it's an American company or an American partnership that comes through with the next energy breakthrough, that figures out how to solve the problems of this planet and make it a better place. It's going to be us, or it's going to be other free Western liberal democracies. And I think it's incumbent on us to make the point that this is not the time for America to cave in. This is not the time to bow our back, to kowtow, to bend over to dictators and tyrants around the world. We can stand up proudly and say America has always stood for freedom. We always will. And we will take the cause of anyone who's oppressed around the world. We'll have Diana West on the next segment to discuss the recent elections in Sweden and some election violence coming from the left. This is Jim Hansen sitting in for Frank Gaffney with Secure Freedom Radio.
Want the big picture on national security and foreign policy? Find out what Ronald Reagan meant by peace through strength at securefreedomradio.org. You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Pat Boone here with a news flash. Finally, there's something conservatives and liberals can agree on. Gold. For thousands of years, gold has united mankind regardless of race, religion, or politics. Gold conserves wealth from financial uncertainty, a higher cost of living, and higher taxes. Yet gold also offers liberal benefits, such as growing fourfold since 2001. In fact, gold transcends left-right politics because its value is based upon ultimate economic truth and substance. So, whether you're a conservative, liberal, or independent, gold should be a part of your portfolio and family legacy. Call Swiss America now and request their free 2010 DVD, CD, and Economic Realities Report.
Call now, 888-393-7513. That's 888-393-7513. 888-393-7513.
Imagine you are a small child living a constant nightmare of abuse and neglect. Late one night, you are rescued from this awful situation and whisked off to a shelter. It happens so fast you have no time to take anything with you. No stuffed animal, no special blanket, not even a clean change of clothes. Scared and with people you don't even know, you have nothing to cling to for comfort. Sadly, each year in America, over 300,000 children endure this trauma and are placed in foster care with empty hands and empty hearts. That's where we come in. With your help, My Stuff Bags Foundation can give these kids their very own My Stuff duffels filled with new toys, a stuffed animal, and other desperately needed items. Let's show thousands of children across America that people do care about them with new belongings and new hope. Please call 8663-MY-STUFF. Or visit mystuffbags.org. That's 8663-MY-STUFF or mystuffbags.org. Thank you.
I'm Peyton Manning. On the football field, I always have to prepare for the unexpected. My teammates and I train to think fast and be ready ahead of the game. You can be ready with the help of your local American Red Cross. The American Red Cross can help all of us prepare for life's emergencies. Take life-saving CPR or first aid courses. Make an emergency plan or learn how to build a disaster supplies kit. Contact the American Red Cross today.
Call 1-800-HELP-NOW or visit redcross.org to learn more.
Pick you up after school. Okay, I got it.
It's easy to take a day for granted. You and your family are connected by routine and you stick to it. But what if a disaster strikes without warning? What if life as you know it has completely turned on its head? What if your day's routine is disrupted and you can't reach your family? Have you planned for that? Before a disaster turns your family's world upside down, it's up to you to be ready. Get a kit. Make a plan. Be informed. Today. Learn how at www.ready.gov. Ready.gov. This message brought to you by the Federal Emergency Management Agency and the Ad Council.
Check it out, it's the Terminator. Hey, when'd you get back, huh?
Did you have to shoot anyone?
Why are you so distant? Are you not happy to see me?
So what's the deal? You gonna get a job now or what?
Why are you being so jumpy? Put all that stuff behind you, okay?
No one knows what it's like to come back from Iraq or Afghanistan unless they were there. Join other veterans at communityofveterans.org because we know where you're coming from. Brought to you by Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
And you, her boyfriend, you were the driver?
Yes, doctor, but I didn't mean to hurt her. I only had a few drinks. I was just buzzed.
Just buzzed? Oh, then your girlfriend is fine.
Hey, sweetie, I feel great.
She's really okay?
What, are you kidding? No, not really. Nurse, get me a suture kit. Stat.
Buzzed driving. Maybe we should stop acting like it's no big deal. Buzzed driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation and the Ad Council.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C. Ideas that can set America free. Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney. Now, more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Jim Hansen, and I'm here today with Diana West. Diana is an author and columnist, writes a weekly column for the Washington Examiner, and comments on culture quite a bit. And I think, Diana, we got a lot going on that I think has, I guess, an impact on what's going on in America, even if it hasn't a direct one. You know, we kind of have been told by some of our betters these days that the Swedish slash Norwegian slash Northern European model is the way to go, and they've got these dynamic super societies going on up there with no problems. And I guess I'm a little skeptical of that. I'm Swedish myself. I'm a Hansen, Swanson, and a Pearson. You know, so out of my background, there's very strong ties to Sweden. And I'm curious, their current elections, what do you think? You know, there was the Swedish Democratic Party, or Democrat Party, actually won about 6% of the vote. And that's been a contentious issue, I think, for Swedes overall. What are your thoughts on these recent elections?
Yes, well, first of all, just for American listeners, when you win 6% of a vote, it sounds like a very insignificant amount of the electorate. But in these parliamentary societies, there is a tipping point that allows you to send representatives into the parliament. And the Sweden Democrats, for the first time, exceeded that percentage. And so that's why this was so very significant in their history. What we were seeing, though, which is probably more significant for our history, is the campaign from the left in Sweden, which is quite a violent force, actually, and it includes a very strong pro-immigrant, which usually means pro-Arab or Muslim immigrant society of factions, coming at the Swedish Democrats to the point where the police actually told them that they would be unable to continue campaigning in the final days of the election because they could not guarantee safety from these mobs. So
that's a tolerant left.
Yeah.
What's wrong with the European tolerant left? I thought these were the peaceful sweetness of light, milk of human kindness folks, and they're that violent.
They're quite violent. I mean, I think in Sweden it may be the most violent. I had a very eye-opening working trip to Europe a couple of summers ago in 2008, and I actually interviewed some members of Sweden Democrats in Malmo, which is one of the hot spots in Sweden. It has a huge immigrant population, which again means Islamic population, and they have all kinds of frequent rioting and burning and just activities like this, which make much of the city at certain times of day or year no-go zones unless you are from this immigrant group. But in discussing their political odyssey, I was hearing about all kinds of assaults on members of this party from Swedish, you know, not necessarily at all from immigrant Swedes, but from, you know, native Swedes on the left, which is a very violent force, attacking them, having rallies, dinners interrupted by tear gas and all kinds of assaults. Indeed, the leader, who has just, you know, enjoyed this tremendous success, Jimmy Åkesson, himself has been, I saw a picture of him bloodied after one of these attacks and had to be hospitalized. So this is really quite a paradox for Americans, because we think of Sweden, we think of, yes, as you just mentioned, and you know, wonderful tans and the midnight sun and all of these lovely images, but it's become a very tense society, to say the least. You have exodus of Jews from these cities where there are high Islamic populations. You've had, just a year or so ago, we had the Davis Cup played with an Israeli team, and the police believed that it was not possible to allow spectators into the stadium, and so they played before an empty stadium to avoid rioting. So Sweden is a very sick society. I mean, sick in the sense of harmed and not functioning as a democracy, when again you have the police telling a lawful political party they cannot campaign for fear of not being able to protect them. So what you are looking at is Sweden in 2010 subject in certain sections of the country to mob rule.
Now, is this essentially the same thing that's happened in the Netherlands, you know, in Denmark, in other areas where they've had large immigrant populations come in, you know, allowed? You know, it's been a policy of many of these European countries to use immigrant populations to offset the fact that their own birth rates are declining. And, you know, so they've used that to prop up some of the social systems. But has it backfired, and is it now, you know, spreading across a good chunk of Northern Europe?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, yes, the immigration problem in Europe is endemic at this point. I think that Sweden may be, from what I can tell, the most violent example of this. But you certainly have these same pressures, and you certainly have these same what are called no-go zones in most European cities that have Islamic populations. I visited some of these zones, for example, in Belgium, not a stone's, well, maybe more than a stone's throw, but maybe a 10, 15-minute drive from the hyper-modern, sleek buildings of the European Union government, just areas where it is dangerous to go if you are not a Muslim, and if you're a woman, certainly not, you know, a Muslim in company of other men. I mean, these are really parallel societies that Europe has allowed to develop and, in a sense, extend Islamic law within them. And that is the very, very perilous lesson that we can draw from Europe. And Sweden, again, doesn't get that much attention, but it should. And now we do see this, at least, you know, this amazing exercise of democracy, really, in a sense, voting for a party that clearly is going to be bringing these problems to the fore. And but I think that they're, you know, this party, very often, very many of the members of this party are quite young and quite committed. And I was very impressed with the ones that I was able to meet on my trip. But I think that you are going to see more of this. And I think that they've taken heart, frankly, from the Danish experience, because in Denmark, you have the Danish People's Party, which has been enjoying electoral success for some many election cycles now, and they have been able to bring about a very strict and helpful immigration policy that has taken down this tremendous influx of these Sharia cultures. And I think that is a lesson that Sweden is drawing from Denmark.
Well, I appreciate your commentary, Diana West, as always, paying close attention to the inroads made by our friends, the peaceful purveyors of submission. That was awful. I can't believe I said that. Diana, I appreciate appreciate you being on. But yeah, Diana writes, you can find her work at dianawest.net. And as I mentioned, she writes a weekly column for the Washington Examiner. We'll be back next with Bill Raggio from the Long War Journal to catch up on our efforts to make dead tangos around the world. This is Jim Hansen sitting in for Frank with Secure Freedom Radio.
Download podcasts, hear clips, read the bios of the amazing people Frank Gaffney interviews, all at SecureFreedomRadio.org. Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio. Secure Freedom Radio, brought to you by SwissAmerica.com.
This is Frank Gaffney. Are you tired of Congress rushing through far-reaching legislation without understanding the consequences or even reading the bill? It's given us a flawed health care plan, an ineffective stimulus package, runaway spending, and crippling debt. Now President Obama wants the Senate to treat our national security the same way by approving the new START treaty with Russia before anyone really understands its ominous implications. The treaty would leave us with fewer deployed nuclear weapons than the Russians and impede our missile defenses while doing nothing about growing nuclear threats from China, Iran, and North Korea. When it comes to keeping America safe, it can't be business as usual on Capitol Hill. Tell your senators that in an ever more dangerous world, we need a strong and reliable deterrent, not a bad treaty. Stop the START treaty now. Paid for by the Center for Security Policy, stopthestarttreaty.org.
Can I have a price check on aisle... ma'am?
Yeah.
Don't look down, but there's a giant python wrapped around your leg.
Oh, yeah, I know. It's probably nothing.
Nothing? Shouldn't I don't know, like, call someone?
No, I don't have the time. I'm late as it is. If it keeps up, I haven't looked at.
Are you sure? That's a pretty big snake.
No, I'm fine. Thank you, though. You're very sweet.
You wouldn't ignore this, so why ignore the signs of a stroke?
If you or someone you know suddenly experiences numbness of the face, arm, or leg, or sudden trouble speaking, seeing, or walking, don't wait to get help. Call 911 right away, because time lost is brain lost. To find out more, visit www.strokeassociation.org or call 1-888-4-STROKE. This message brought to you by the American Stroke Association and the Ad Council.
This morning, a woman reached out. A man stepped up. A family drove their elderly neighbor to the doctor. Someone took 2 hours of their morning to help someone else find affordable childcare near work. Somebody sat down with 16-year-old Steven and taught him better note-taking skills and study habits, and suddenly, toughing it out till graduation seemed to Steven a pretty good idea. All this happened today. It'll happen tomorrow. It's happening here, there, right down the street. People are living united. We're not just wearing the shirt, we're living it. We're realizing that the way we live our lives can impact the way others live theirs, their education, their income, even their health. So do something, any little something, as long as it's something. Give, advocate, volunteer. Live United. Go to liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Hey, it's me, your piggy bank. Remember when you were a little kid? All the dimes and quarters in my back. Yeah, that was good times. Good times. Now lately, I gotta be honest, you've been ignoring me. Money's been slipping through your hands like a greased pig. Get it? Because I'm a... Anyway, I know how it is. Now that you get a real paycheck, it's nice to have stuff. You'll start saving money next year. Well, I hate to tell you, but good saving habits start now. Put just 20 bucks in the bank a month. Make your own coffee at home instead of that latte every morning. Brown bag it to work instead of ordering in. Those changes alone could save you thousands of dollars a year. Come on, I'm your piggy bank. We can be together again, me and you, the special times. Anyway, if you don't want me to cry anymore, feed me. Go to feedthepig.org for more ideas on how to save.
Feedthepig.org.
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
And welcome to today's lottery drawing. Good luck. And here's today's winning numbers. First one up, it's not yours. Second one, not yours. And another number that's not yours. Okay, this is one number that's yours. It's a 5, but you don't get any money for that. And the final number is not yours.
Yep, so chances are you're not going to hit the lottery anytime soon. Don't get us wrong. The lottery can be fun every now and then. Just please don't rely on it for your future savings. How about this? Brew your own coffee at home instead of buying that latte every day. Brown bag it to work instead of ordering in. Ride your bike instead of buying all that gas. These changes alone can save you thousands a year. Thousands. Small changes today, big bucks tomorrow. Feed that piggy bank. Go to feedthepig.org for more free ideas on how to save.
Feedthepig.org.
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
Radio that improves your chances for survival in a dangerous world. Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney. Make Facebook your source for essential national security analysis. Search for Frank Gaffney and add him to your friends list.
This is Jim Hansen back with Secure Freedom Radio, and joining me for the segment is Bill Raggio, proprietor of the Long War Journal. Welcome, sir.
Thanks, Jim. It's always a pleasure.
Well, Bill, there's always far too much going on in our ongoing efforts against man-caused disasters around the world. But some men caused a little bit of minor disaster in Somalia here in an attempt to attack the presidential palace. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, a suicide bomber was able to get past the first ring of security at the presidential palace in Mogadishu. This is one of the few secured locations, or supposedly secured locations in Mogadishu that's security is provided by the African Union Security Forces, I guess what you would call the Somali Army. The suicide attack failed, so it wasn't, a spectacular attack. But what it is the latest in a string of attacks where Shabab shows that they can actually penetrate security at the very few high security installations in Mogadishu. This is the fourth attack on a high security area in the last month. Fourth suicide attack, that is. One of them was very successful, killed five Somali ministers at an attack at a hotel right next to the presidential palace. And again, this was a secured location because it, these lawmakers and other officials and, would go to this hotel. And in that particular attack, I think it was around August 23rd or 22nd, the Shabab assault team, you know, pulled a mini Mumbai, went in, stormed the hotel, shot people up and detonated their vests. They killed 28 people. So Shabab's really stepping up its attacks against the African Union and forces and the transitional federal government forces of the, I guess you'd say, so-called Somali government.
Everything over there tends to be pretty sketchy. What can you tell us about Shabab?
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, you know, that's the local Al-Qaeda franchise, but give us a little background on them and what their current state is.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head there. It is Al-Qaeda's franchise in Eastern Africa. Shabab, very effective terror group. It carried out its first external suicide attack in, I think it was July 11th in Kampala, in Uganda, attacked two bars as the soccer fans were watching the World Cup there, killed somewhere around 72, 74 people. But yeah, Shabab, it is populated, its top leadership is populated with foreign leaders, just as Al-Qaeda in Iraq had done so as well. So, you know, one of its top leaders is a guy who carried out the dual suicide attack from 1998, in Kenya and Tanzania, invited with Osama bin Laden and Zawahiri and that whole crew. So he's basically Shabab's leader. You have Saudis and Pakistanis and other Arabs, Yemeni, who populate Shabab's top leadership positions. Even an American, Abu Azam Amriki, he's basically a top military commander as well as a chief propagandist for Shabab. They've been very effective at attacking African Union forces and Somali forces. Shabab runs just about most of central and southern Somalia in conjunction with a you know, sometimes ally and sometimes a rival group called Hizbul Islam. That group is led by Hassan Tahir Oase, who the U.S. has designated as a specially global designated terrorist for his links to Al-Qaeda. He's trained in an Afghan camp, believed to be the mastermind behind the Black Hawk Down incident in Mogadishu in 1993. So, you know, with Shabab and between Shabab and Hizbul Islam, you have some really nasty guys with a lot of experience in local and global jihad that are going up against about 8,000 African troops that are holed up in some small bases in Mogadishu and some other areas and then a wildly ineffective Somali security forces.
Now, how does the political situation look there? There's been a lot of jockeying, you know, between what, like, you, I guess you put scare quotes about pretty much everything you discuss in Somalia because they don't think they rise up to the levels of, you know, what we consider elements of a civil society. They're partway there, but it's always chaos. But do we have allies there? You know, is there anybody we can really work with, or is it just a situation of the lesser of the many evils?
Yeah, you know, you're absolutely right. I mean, I think you do have to put things in scare quotes when you're talking about Somalia. The president of Somalia right now, Sheikh Shariff, was the leader of what's called the Islamic Courts. It used to be called the Islamic Courts. It was the predecessor to Shabab / Hizbul Islam. He cut some kind of negotiated deal where he and the so-called moderates, you know, that in quotes as well, Jim, joined with the warlords and now make up the transitional federal government. You know, this is a guy who, under his watch, actively sponsored suicide attacks. And the United States, you know, thought it was a very good idea to support a character like this, as did the European Union and the United Nations and, you know, everyone else. And the political situation's a real mess there. Just had the resignation of the prime minister. He was at odds with Sharif over who knows what. I mean, you know, warlordism and tribalism or clanism is probably more accurate way to put it in Somalia are rampant. The real, you know, you have something like 600 members of parliament in the parliament, but the parliament doesn't really do anything. It barely holds meetings. It's just a real political nightmare. You have very few actors to work with. The only real actors that you can reliably work with are the Ugandan and Burundi peacekeepers. Again, let's put that in quotes because they're actively fighting and shelling Shabaab positions in Mogadishu every day. They're the only actors that you can really rely on. And as we know, without, you know, some reliable local actors, it's really difficult to wage an effective counterinsurgency. You can't say a counterinsurgency is being fought in Somalia because there just really aren't any counterinsurgents there.
And is there any hope we could do that? I mean, is it even a good idea given the chaos there? Or is that one of those places, you know, where every once in a while we just squash it flat and say rubble doesn't make trouble?
Yeah, you know, I don't know what the solution is to Somalia. I do know that what most people advise, which is just completely withdrawing from the region and letting those sort it out themselves. This is the same crowd that thought it was a good idea to keep the Islamic courts in and that the U.S. meddled and created Shabaab, which is utter nonsense. That's not going to work because, you know, while, you know, these people argue, well, there was a certain peace in Somalia. Yeah, it was the peace of the Taliban that the Taliban had in Afghanistan. They're sheltering top al-Qaeda leaders in East Africa. We've killed two out of the top three in strikes, just as you mentioned. Yeah, I think until some type of real solution can be achieved, you know, there's really very little option other than to try and hit these terrorists in special operations for aid and supporting the African Union forces there as best as possible is really the only option that exists.
Well, folks, that's the informed opinion of Mr. Bill Raggio, who is the proprietor of the Long War Journal, tracks our efforts against global Islamic extremism, terrorism of every flavor, not just Islamists. There are plenty of other bad actors around. Bill, one thing, if you could, I guess when we come back after the break, I wanted to get back to the area where we've been focused on mostly, which is Afghanistan and the elections that just happened and whether there is any reason for hope there. So, folks, we'll be right back with Mr. Bill Raggio. This is Jim Hansen sitting in for Frank Gaffney on Secure Freedom Radio.
First line of defense in the war of ideas, Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney. Miss a show? Find podcasts of Frank and the world's leading national security experts and policymakers at securefreedomradio.org. Ever vigilant, Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Hello, friend. Pat Boone here with some good financial news for a change. Although stocks, bonds, and real estate may be stuck in a rut this year, the next mega stage of the long-term bull market in gold and silver is just beginning. Experts say gold will soon rush to new historic highs because gold alone is real money and offers value, safety, and growth. Gold is no longer a luxury. Today it's a necessity. Safety first. Start now by letting Swiss America educate and inspire you to rediscover gold for your existing IRA. Ask for their rare opportunity DVD and CD. Stop worrying about financial gloom and do something to protect yourself.
Call now, 888-393-7513. That's 888-393-7513.
Swiss America knows gold.
Call now, 888-393-7513. That's 888-393-7513.
Most days go by without a whole lot of surprises. But what if a disaster strikes without warning? What if life as you know it has completely turned on its head? Would you be prepared? Before a disaster turns your family's world upside down, be ready. Get a kit. Make a plan. Be informed. Learn how at www.ready.gov. Brought to you by the Federal Emergency Management Agency and the Ad Council.
Hands can do incredible things. They made every sound in this piece of music. But nothing compares to using them to help save a life. If an adult suddenly collapses, call 911, then push hard and fast in the center of their chest until help arrives. It's called hands-only CPR, and it's recommended by the American Heart Association. Visit handsonlycpr.org today. A message from the American Heart Association and the Ad Council.
As a veteran of Iraq or Afghanistan, joining IAVA.org really helps in the transition home. It's a network of OIF and OEF vets like me who've got your back here, just like we did over there. That means when you need help navigating the GI Bill, we've got your back. And when you're dealing with the transition home, we've got your back. Or when you just want someone to share stories with, we've got your back. Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America is there for you. Join our community at IAVA.org. We've got your back.
Brought to you by IAVA and the Ad Council.
Fire took place 3 years ago. There was a lightning strike. The winds picked up and the fire just took off. You're in shock. You don't know what you're feeling. You have nothing. I lost my home and 40 years worth of art. I never thought that I would need help from the Red Cross. They gave me emotional support to get up in the morning. I'll never forget what the Red Cross did for me.
Contact your local Red Cross chapter or visit redcross.org.
Joel Klein catches a 7 o'clock train after his evening CPR class at the American Red Cross.
Ron Garrity's on the same train. He's had a rough day and doesn't feel like himself. Until he feels the sudden tightness in his chest, Ron never thought he'd actually have a heart attack.
Until Joel is administering CPR, he never thought he'd actually save a life.
When you train with the Red Cross, you change a life.
Starting with your own.
Call 1-800-RED-CROSS or visit redcross.org to learn about life-changing opportunities in your...
Hey, Charlie, what gives?
Hey, did you see that play last night?
Oh, unbelievable. What do they feed that guy?
Yeah, but they still lost.
Yeah, I know.
You know, when I was playing, what we tried to
you,
do...
You played on Biltmore Street.
Hey, come on. I play in the service.
Oh, right.
Anyhow, what I'm trying to say is the kid, he
should have fallen down. Hey, you okay? Stop joking around. Oh, no. Someone call 911!
It can happen anytime, any place, without warning. Fact is, 2 out of 3 people with diabetes die of a heart attack or stroke, and many don't even know they're at risk. The good news is, if you or someone you love has diabetes, you can lower the risk. But it's up to you to ask your healthcare provider how. For more information, go to diabetesactnow.org. That's diabetesactnow.org. Brought to you by the American Diabetes Association and the Ad Council.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio. Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Hey folks, Jim Hansen sitting in for Frank Gaffney with Secure Freedom Radio. And our guest for another segment is Mr. Bill Raggio. He was informing us about the issues in Somalia with that group of Islamic terrorists. And now we'd like to head back to another hotspot where there was a lot of interesting activity over the weekend and with the recent elections. Bill, what was your opinion of the level of, I guess, activity around for both the Taliban and also the amount of folks who turned out for this election? How did it go?
I think that given what the Taliban has been able to do, the fact that they were actually able to pull off elections, I think I saw a number that around something like 92% of the polling stations that they decided to open remained open. So I guess that's some sort of success. But, you know, part of the problem here, I mean, look, the situation is really bad in Afghanistan, and I don't think that's any secret. It's a parliamentary election. There's a lot of disgust and distrust of the Afghan government right now. I'm not sure how much the Afghans are really going to be, excited or motivated by this election, or how much it really means to them. I mean, the Afghan government is just an absolute mess, Jim, as we know. And I think until that the real problems of corruption go away, I don't think we could be really excited about something like these parliamentary elections. As far as the Taliban's ability to conduct attacks, the U.S., Afghan and U.S. forces basically flooded the zone at these polling stations. They were able to pull off some sporadic attacks. Some outlets claim only 10 killed. From tracking the Afghan news, I think I estimated something around 41 were killed. Not a big deal. They were able to pull off attacks, and interestingly enough, most of these attacks that they pulled off were up in the north. But in the really bad areas, in the south and the east, the Afghan government just didn't even open polling stations. So I think that tells you that that there's a very real problem with security in Afghanistan. It's just really tough to be. I know that ISAF has been very positive about the situation in their ability to interdict the Taliban and senior Taliban leaders killed and captured. I'm finding it hard at this point to be very optimistic. And it's not because I don't think ISAF's doing a good job, but I think that there's two major problems. One being the legitimacy of the Afghan government. There's no real opposition to it as well to give people hope. And the other being the sanctuaries that still exist in Pakistan. And I don't think the U.S. has a policy to deal with that problem. And as long as they exist, those sanctuaries exist, we may have some tactical success in the short term, but, the prospects for a secure Afghanistan in the long term, to me, are pretty bleak until Pakistan is dealt with.
Well, all right, let's start with the first of those two incredibly daunting problems, and the corruption. Is there any way to gain the support and the trust and the belief of the Afghan people as long as Karzai and his brothers and that ruling clique are stealing the country blind?
Yeah, I don't see a way out of this until they're removed from power. And I'm not talking removed from power by the United States. That would be a humongous mistake. I'm talking about until they're legitimately ejected from the halls of power in Afghanistan.
Who's going to do that?
By the Afghan people.
How can they do
that? Right, exactly. I mean, that's exactly right, Jim. That's why I think that is a very, I think that ISAF is either put on their blinders on this one, or they really don't understand the complexity of the corruption problem that exists in Afghanistan. And people will say, well, look, you had Prime Minister Maliki had the same problem. You didn't. With Maliki, what you had was he was intimidated by the Sadrists. I mean, they threatened his life in 2006 and the lives of his family. You didn't, by the Mahdi army backed by Iran. But he grew a pair, and he went out and took on the Mahdi army as well as took on the Sadrists. He had a real legitimate Iraqi security force. You don't have those, you just don't have that situation in Afghanistan like you had in Iraq. Iraq was a far easier problem politically than Afghanistan.
And given the fact that it's not just Karzai, his brothers are huge beneficiaries of the current regime, have been just shoveling money into satchels and heading it out of the country to Dubai and other places. Is that something where even if somehow they manage to game an election against the election gamers and win, what happens if Karzai decides to become, a Putin, a power outside the throne?
Yeah, part of the problem that exists now, Jim, is that, we're seen as backing Karzai, so we're not getting, our legitimacy fades daily when we're standing behind him. That's a complete hypothetical that you mentioned there, because where is the real opposition to Karzai? It really doesn't exist. It's members of the Northern Alliance who are completely unorganized, and, the question becomes is would the question they're asking is would the Karzais continue to be able to wield power as they do today? I don't think they'll be able to wield power like they do today, but what they can do is make things a lot more difficult for us, like, say, throwing in with the Taliban.
Yeah, and I mean, that's one of the things...
Or covertly supporting.
Yeah, well, they've obviously got negotiations with them underway. There have been the talks that have been facilitated by one of Karzai's brothers with some of the Taliban leaders. And, you know, I mean, they played the double game against us where we pay insurance to Karzai's brother and Kandahar's companies for our trucks to be able to drive in from Pakistan, and then the same folks he's dealing with end up stealing all those supplies as they come in. So it's a tough situation. I wonder, are we better off, you know, again, with at least a strong horse we know, and we know his corruption, and try to rein that in? Because I don't see an alternative outside of the Karzais.
Yeah, I think that one of the things that it's too early to know, I don't want to sit here and say that the whole thing is, because I think it's far too early. I think a lot of things can happen in Afghanistan, but I think one of the mistakes we may have made with the surge, and this is just, I'm speculating here, Jim. I'm not saying this definitively. I might have approached this a little bit differently and gone and tried to secure the areas where we really could secure, and flood the zone in places like in the north and in the west, where they're not the real traditional major Taliban strongholders, they're sort of the secondary theaters. We committed a lot of forces in the south and the east where these are real tough nuts to crack. But if we could have secured those, particularly those spots in the north and central and Afghanistan, you know, this is the traditional areas of Northern Alliance, we could get those areas under control, then you could, you know, have some legitimacy there with the Afghan people, and, you know, have better chance of having legitimate other options than Karzai, you know, to grow in a better political environment. Instead, we committed all our forces into the... We put them right into the teeth of the Taliban, and I don't necessarily disagree with that, but I'm just saying, you know, to try and influence the political situation, which needed to be done as well, I'm wondering, you know, because there's just very little if political support for ISAF and the Afghan government down in the south and in some areas in the east, whereas up in the north, they want to have a legitimate government. They want to back a legitimate government, but all they've seen over the last several years is just increasing chaos, and now they're looking around and they're saying, you know, the guy we backed has given us this. So, you know, Afghanistan's a really difficult problem. I certainly wouldn't want to have to deal with this one, making the decisions to deal with this one. I mean, the other problem, of course, that exists is that we've given ourselves an unrealistic deadline to withdraw, and that really hurts our political, you know, hurts people their willingness to throw in with us for political support as well. But that's something that we've discussed before, and that's certainly well documented.
That was our president's political pandering to his left. Well, appreciate Mr. Bill Raggio from the Long War Journal keeping us up on our war against terrorism all the way around. That's it for Secure Freedom Radio. This was Jim Hansen sitting in for Mr. Frank Gaffney.
You've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, brought to you by SwissAmerica.com.
This is Frank Gaffney. Are you tired of Congress rushing through far-reaching legislation without understanding the consequences or even reading the bill? It's given us a flawed health care plan, an ineffective stimulus package, runaway spending, and crippling debt. Now President Obama wants the Senate to treat our national security the same way by approving the new START treaty with Russia before anyone really understands its ominous implications. The treaty would leave us with fewer deployed nuclear weapons than the Russians and impede our missile defenses while doing nothing about growing nuclear threats from China, Iran, and North Korea. When it comes to keeping America safe, it can't be business as usual on Capitol Hill. Tell your senators that in an ever more dangerous world, we need a strong and reliable deterrent, not a bad treaty. Stop the START treaty now. Paid for by the Center for Security Policy, stopthestarttreaty.org.